Welcome back to the official 2010 AAS Europe podcast, coming to you live from the floor of the 128th convention in Hammersmith, London. It's Monday morning, and the convention is in full swing, with more audio industry professionals expected to visit today. Despite the uncommonly fantastic weather the UK has been enjoying over the weekend, which has seen temperatures of around 30 degrees Celsius or 85 degrees Fahrenheit, there were swarms of visitors over the weekend in the exhibition hall downstairs and in the conference lobby and technical sessions, including many foreign students. The AAS has a full programme of activities for students at its convention, which I have so far neglected to mention, so it's time to say a little bit about it. The sessions aimed at students are organised by the AAS's SDA, or Student Delegate Assembly, with its very energetic chairman Miroslav Yakovlevich. Miroslav welcomed the many student visitors to the convention in a ceremony on Saturday afternoon, and set out what London had to offer young visitors with an interest in audio and recording in a great speech which highlighted some of the fantastic people and developments from London that have influenced the industry over the years, such as the first experiments in stereo recording at Abbey Road in the 1930s under Alan Blumlein, production geniuses like Joe Meek, who discovered the creative potential of compressors in the late 1950s and then created groundbreaking records from a tiny flat on the Holloway Road in the early 1960s, engineers and producers like George Martin and Jeff Emerick, who pushed the limits of what developing multi-track recording facilities had to offer, rock bands who pushed the envelope like the Rolling Stones and Pink Floyd, and the later punk, new romantic and electronic dance, DJ and clubbing scenes which are still alive and developing today. If anyone was in any doubt about why the AAS was in London, this speech helped to put it across brilliantly. The annual Student Career Fair took place yesterday morning, giving AAS student delegates an opportunity to get together with representatives of some of the companies advertising in the exhibition hall, and to check out post-education opportunities in the audio industry. After lunch, the education fair was held in the same room, performing a similar task but allowing students to meet representatives of further education colleges and institutions running audio production and recording courses face-to-face. Bridging these two events, appropriately enough, was a discussion session on the benefits of having recording courses accredited by the audio industry, organised by JAMES, the education arm of the MPG, the UK Music Producers Guild, the Association of Professional Recording Services, or APRS, and the UK Screen Association. Following my chat with Convention Chairman Josh Rice on Saturday morning, I had wanted to talk to somebody from the MPG or the APRS anyway, as they were both heavily involved in organising some of the more commercially orientated seminars in the convention, and had also helped to ensure that the UK's producers and engineers were well represented in the engineer and producer Q&A and discussion sessions. I managed to get some time on Monday morning on the James stand with top UK producer and remixer Phil Harding, and he told me more about the MPG and APRS's involvement with the seminar programme at the show, and also about the developing role of James, which seeks to foster closer cooperation between the media industries, audio and video, and education. So I'm now here on the James stand with Phil Harding, who is wearing several hats at this show. Phil is co-vice chair of the MPG, who have been involved alongside the APRS and in collaboration with the AES in producing the extensive seminar programme upstairs. Phil, the conferences, whenever I've been up to that floor, have been really very busy indeed, with a lot of people coming in and out of the rooms. It's been an excellent programme, and Josh Rice was very complimentary a couple of days ago about the involvement of the MPG in that.
Good, yeah.
Can you tell us a bit more about that role?
Yeah, well, it has been very lively upstairs, as you said, and across the weekend we seem to have been inundated and flooded with European students.
Indeed.
Which is great, you know, great to see such a big attendance. We were asked with the APRS to organise a couple of the panels, and
sure.
Apart from the producer panel the other day, we've got one of our MPG guys, Tommy D,
and that's he's the one on metadata, isn't it?
Yeah, he's become particularly interested in metadata,
right.
and trying to make a kind of audio industry push towards, you know, getting that standardised and getting
sure.
it iTunes and the others to get all that in there,
because it's a real uphill struggle, isn't it?
It's gonna be a tough one, I think, to
definitely.
but you know, someone's got to start it, and the MPG feels it's in a position to make a forward thrust on that. Our current chairman, Steve Levine, sits on the UK Music Board.
Yes,
and although he was sitting on that as a Basker Songwriters Group director, he does now officially sit on it representing MPG.
The MPG as well, right.
So in fact, on behalf of the whole UK audio side of the music industry, that's quite big news. You
yeah,
know,
absolutely.
There's been only a kind of a soft launch on that so far, because
yeah.
it's literally only happened in the last few weeks.
Sure. So you're hoping you can progress towards
it? We are, yes, and so therefore Tommy will take those metadata discussions into the broader industry.
Yeah, excellent. What's your ideal goal? What would you really like to see happen if you could have what you really want?
Well, what we'd like to see, at least on iTunes, is that every download contains metadata information that would be the equivalent to your CD sleeve or an old vinyl cover.
Right.
So you know what studios it's produced at, who's engineered it, who's produced it, who the musicians are.
Sure.
All those kind of credits that actually most music fans would like to know.
Absolutely, yeah. So in other words, everybody gets a credit.
Yes.
Even when there's no physical form of the track at all, there's no CD,
exactly.
There's no sleeve notes.
And as we know, most large commercial tracks that you download on iTunes, they'll come with a maybe a front sleeve,
yeah, sure,
and some other bits, but we
you're not
feel
get those credits,
ideal scenarios, all the credits should come as well.
Sure.
And whether the punter chooses to open and look at those credits, that's another thing.
Sure.
Quite how it's delivered, not 100% sure,
no,
at the moment.
No, sure,
Tommy,
sure.
If you catch Tommy later on, he might give you a better answer on that.
But that's a good idea. Yeah.
That would be our ultimate goal,
is that
becomes a norm. And then it feels from an audio industry side that we're back on almost a kind of a level playing field of people knowing who we are and what we do.
Yeah, sure.
Because if we've in the download world, we feel like we've almost become anonymous.
Yeah, I think a lot of artists feel that way as well.
Sure, and therefore, so if someone wants to know, it takes a fair bit of research.
Definitely.
To find out, or they've got to go and buy the physical product.
The physical CD, exactly.
The platinum producer and engineer panels have been very good, very lively,
sure,
as they always are at AES conventions. You know, I mean,
absolutely.
When I've visited as a punter myself,
sure,
a couple of times to the ones in America, I've really delighted at sitting and hearing other recording professionals telling their story,
yeah,
you know, playing a track and describing the track.
Breaking it down.
You can't beat it.
No, it's fantastic.
Yeah, and Howard Massey's been a very good panel moderator. This is the MPG dipping its toe into the water for the first time, really,
with
AES. You know, it's been a long-term thing for APRS, new for James as well, James is the educational arm of both organisations.
This is your other hat, of course.
So with so many students here, obviously a lot of their lecturers and tutors are here. Got a chap there from Bucks Uni that I need to talk to.
Just
the sort of people that we want to talk to about our accreditation system,
sure,
that James,
sure,
does,
sure,
which is industry accreditation for university and college courses.
Yes.
Where we go in as industry professionals, take a look at the courses that are being taught. We send two assessors. They look at the paperwork. They talk to the staff. They talk to the students. Give recommendations. You know, don't insist on anything.
No.
But it's almost like a mentoring day for the people running the course, reassuring them that if they are running it to an industry level, which
standard,
is what we're looking for,
standard,
that we're going in and saying so. We've always got some suggestions.
Sure,
you know,
absolutely.
That's the life of producers and engineers.
I think it's a great idea because, let's face it, there are so many, you know, music technology, recording courses, whatever you want to call them.
That's right. How does a student know which course to go on to, and very importantly, how does an employer know,
sure,
which students to look to employ?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that second point I've just made, the employers, and I know there are fewer of them these days,
sure,
but
sure,
audio is widespread. It's not just commercial recording studios anymore.
No, absolutely.
They asked Dave Ward of APRS 12 years ago to come up with a scheme that would allow them some kind of, shall we say, filtering system.
Sure, a kite mark, if you like, or a sort of gold standard.
We can call it a kite mark, we can give it many names.
Sure.
It's not validation, it's not academic, it's industry-based.
No, understood.
So we're finding, you know, many partners enjoying working with that. It's a good benefit to them, and the follow-up benefit are the master classes and seminars that we then take to them.
I see, yeah.
Which have improved in as much as, you know, we've done a number to see how it goes.
Sure.
We've worked out different formats. So we can go all the way from like one person like myself doing a one-day visit or just a two-hour visit through to, as you see there on that poster, a panel of five industry professionals that went to Leeds Metropolitan for a day.
Gotcha.
They do a joint panel, a bit like we've seen next door.
Sure.
And then they split off and do individual workshops and masterclasses, you know, in a studio environment.
Excellent.
Showing how they work in Pro Tools or their various...
It sounds very detailed, but going beyond even, you know, the sort of thing that we've seen here at the AES.
Yes.
Yeah,
actual demonstrations of your Pro Tools. files, and it is possible in these environments. Mm. You know, we might suggest that to AES. You know, you've only got a wheel when you've got a large set of PMCs, as we've seen in
in those beautiful rooms. System up there. Yeah.
You know, you've just got a wheel in, you know, a G5 and a few bits and pieces, and you could be running a Proton session
straight into it.
There.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And we've done it. You know, we've done it for 150 people at Queen's University Belfast, for instance.
Yeah, sure,
and,
sure.
And we've done it at Westminster, and we've done it at Leeds. So we know it works. So the next stage.
Yeah.
We've now got some sponsors involved in that, some industry manufacturers, Prism, Sadie, Focusrite, and so on. And these are our seven regional centres.
This is the Mic to Master tour, isn't it?
Yes,
I was talking to Graham Boswell about this just the other day. This is great because, again, it's an opportunity for them to present their kit, but also they deal with a lot of excellent clients, and you have relationships as well that you can draw on.
Exactly.
You've got a lot of big names speaking. And
yeah, that's right. Yeah. Benefit to everybody. And from the point of view of James, you know, our main motto, as it were, is we're trying to be the link between the music and media industry and education.
Right, absolutely.
And it really is for education to take advantage of that.
Yeah, sure.
You know, we're here for them. Most of them are beginning to hear about us. But we're all volunteers.
Yeah, of course.
So we are, you know, freelancers giving up our spare time.
Sure.
And that is quite tricky. I mean, our accreditation comes with a cost, and so do the masterclasses and seminars. But all that does is cover the time of a freelance industry professional.
Of course, absolutely.
So everything else that goes into running an organisation, very difficult.
Yeah.
You know, hence we've gone tricky. To manufacturing sponsors.
Absolutely, yeah.
We're at the UK Music Board, and we're talking to other friends.
Yes, indeed.
As
people,
it were.
People can help out.
Because we need a bit of support.
Sure.
We could do with a part-time or full-time administrator and a base.
Right, yeah.
We have no base.
Absolutely.
You know, people come around and say, well, where are you based? Well, you know,
wherever
like any freelancer. We're based wherever we happen to be. Yeah.
Of course, yeah.
Or from home. So that's where we are. It's difficult to get money into industry organisations.
Indeed.
Somehow we managed to battle our way through.
No, absolutely.
And by getting more people interested, I mean, obviously MPG and APRS are membership based. Mm-hmm. So that's their main.
That helps. You've got a subscription coming in.
But we are finding, as I say, more friendly support from manufacturers is coming, because obviously manufacturers are well aware that education for them is now a very good sales area.
Yeah, absolutely, it's key.
Having a presence of shows like this is great.
The logical final question to ask is has it worked for you? Certainly, as we said at the very beginning, there are an awful lot of students here, particularly on the first morning on Sunday that the exhibition was open. There were floods of foreign accents all around.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So, you know, do you feel you got good footfall and good traffic from that?
Yeah, we have.
And I must say, you know, as somebody's been to the AES in the States before, it's been a delight to see, you know, the AES in the States has traditionally always had a good representation from the US industry organisations, you know, and the seminars that have been organised there, for example, you know, have always been taken care of by local organisations. It's great to see a good spread of similar industry organisations involved with the AES.
It's been good to have George Asenberg and Chuck Ainley over.
Absolutely, that's great.
But I think us Brits have done a good contribution as well.
And yourself as well, obviously involved in the... And I believe we had Steve Lipson as well.
Steve Lipson and
John Kelly.
The other day.
Yeah,
so all very good.
It's been great to see it. Phil, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
I'm glad you had a good show.
Cheers.
See you again.
Another important function of the AES is its role as a standards organisation. During the 128th convention, there were over a dozen standards committee meetings on topics ranging from digital interfacing and microphone measurement to standards for the developing fields of recording metadata, the topic mentioned by Phil Harding, and forensic audio. A hot topic at this year's convention, as mentioned in my short interview with Andy Page of DK Technologies on Sunday morning, was the establishment of new standards for loudness in broadcast, a requirement that has become all the more urgent in recent years with the spread of surround sound for TV broadcast. The European Broadcasting Union's P-Loud group, which comprises many broadcasters and meter manufacturers, is proposing a new set of standards to help broadcasters regulate perceived audio levels in surround, and these were discussed in an AES discussion panel held on Monday afternoon. The P-Loud group was also mentioned by Soundlink's Roger Klimo in the interview with him on Sunday afternoon, which was included in my first AES podcast. Roger mentioned P-Loud in passing, in connection with a new piece of software from the French manufacturer Trinov Audio, whose products Soundlink distribute in the UK. As no one from Trinov was available when I spoke to Roger Klimo, I took up his offer to come back to the Soundlink stand later on Monday afternoon to ask someone from Trinov more about their new software.
So, on the recommendation of Roger Klimo, I've returned to the Soundlink stand, this time to talk to Felipe from Trinov Audio, and they're showing their systems, which have been available in the UK through Soundlink Marketing for a couple of years, and are now also available in the UK from the distributor Emerging. And basically, the concept behind Trinov Audio's products is to equalise the room where you might be doing your mixing. So, if you're doing mixing in a less than ideal acoustic environment, the Trinov system will help to compensate for that and produce a better starting point for you to create your mixes than you might otherwise have had in a suboptimal room. I believe you had a couple of new products that you've introduced mm-hmm. recently. Can you tell us more about them?
Yes, sure. So the first thing was to show our new loudness meter.
Sure.
Which complies to the recommendation from the EBU, the R128.
Sure.
And it's a very important tool, you know, to have
as part of your systems. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's about, you know, having a comprehensive monitoring system.
Sure.
So it goes well with monitoring control, metering, and loudspeaker optimization.
Very important. Yeah.
So that was the first thing, the loudness meter.
Sure.
And the other thing was to show the new model of the stereo machine.
Yes, indeed.
The ST2 Pro. It has four channels.
Oh,
so
okay. Right.
You can have two pairs or, you know, different sources as well.
Yes. Is this box aimed not only at people who are working in a professional environment, but also in the hi-fi world? Because
yes,
I can see that
right.
It could have some immediate application there.
Yes, of course. Many audiophiles really appreciate the fact that they'll get a better stereo image and tonal
Absolutely.
Balance.
Absolutely. So what would you do if you were a hi-fi client? You'd buy your system, you'd set it up in the room in which you listen to your music, and you'd let it equalize the room for you and then equalize your playback system. Is that how it works?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, you set up the microphone in
sure.
your listening position, or
sure.
you can also measure several listening positions.
Okay, yeah.
And optimize a wider listening area.
I see. To bank a better sweet spot.
Yeah, that's right. You can enlarge the sweet spot in this
I
way.
I see, yeah.
And you will... It just takes about 5 minutes, you know, to do the
sure.
measurements and
sure.
set up the system.
Excellent, yeah.
And so you can even manage active crossovers with it. So
right, yeah.
So you have your two-way or three-way systems, you can also do it.
So for the real hi-fi fan who has a decent set of active speakers, then you let the system really go to town on that. Yeah, I mm-hmm. see. Excellent. And the loudness meter, is that a software part of your system or is it a physical piece of hardware?
Yeah, it's really a software option can be added to the optimizer, to the main processor. It's quite modular. We have the basic processor, and then we can add software modules on top of it.
Sure, of course.
Either the optimizer or the metering or both. And either on the stereo unit or on the multi-channel unit. And the other new thing in our stereo unit is that we are now using our own soundboards.
Right.
Which have very good converters.
Excellent.
And which are also very modular, so you can upgrade from stereo system to a multi-channel system.
I see. So so you could start with a two-channel system, but move up to a multi-channel system if you're interested in using it for
Yeah, exactly.
Mixing.
I mean, it requires a factory update, but it's possible. You don't
sure.
have to totally change the
sure.
box.
Lastly, you obviously felt it was worth making the trip to London to show your new products. Has the show worked for you? Have you had visitors that are important to you?
We wanted to come to London
sure.
you know, to meet our usual contacts and also to meet new people.
Sure.
And yes, I think it was worthwhile.
That's good.
Yes, it was quite positive. Yeah.
I know there were a lot of students and young people here on Sunday morning. The show was very, very busy then, and there were a lot of European accents and American accents around the place.
Several schools are using our system, so
right, right.
You know, it's good to let them know that
sure.
this system, you know, what it does and how it also is a very interesting teaching tool.
Yes, absolutely.
To actually show to the students what acoustic problems are and, you know, how they influence the monitoring.
Yes, absolutely.
So still interesting to meet them.
That's great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Many of the companies I've spoken to at the AES exhibition this year have been from abroad, the USA or Europe. But there are, of course, plenty of UK distributors and manufacturers here too, taking advantage of the exhibition's easy-to-reach London location. One such company, who I spoke to in the late afternoon, is Rycote Microphone Windshields, who are based in the west of England and were also at the convention to show a recently introduced product, the Rycote USM, or Universal Studio Mount.
Ryko, of course, are a UK manufacturer of windshields for microphones and also microphone suspension systems to prevent nasty vibrations reaching the microphone capsule. And I'm here with the new international sales manager, Stefano Pacella, from Italy, although long resident in this country, but you may recognise his accent, and Tim Constable, who's also recently joined the company to help drive UK sales. Guys, you're showing the Ryko USM here at AES, which is a universal microphone suspension. Tell us a bit more about that.
Hi, Matt. Yes, I mean, we introduced the Universal Studio Mount, USM, back in January, basically when I joined the company as well. And we launched the USM in NAMM in Los Angeles. And straight away, actually, I had a very good feedback from the end users. Well, the rationale behind the Universal Studio Mount is coming from the same technology that has been adopted by Ryko in the last 3 years, that is the LIA, that is the patent technology of suspension.
So you're not using rubber bands or anything like
there
that
there are
anymore?
No rubber bands anymore, and therefore that is the first advantage. You know, as you know, the actual elastic has to be changed from time to time, because otherwise it's going to sag the microphone into the cat's cradle. This one instead is made of a material that is called ITRO, that is virtually unbreakable.
For those who haven't seen the Universal Studio Mount, it's essentially a large circular mount into which the microphone fits, and it's suspended and decoupled from the microphone stand by a series of these clips, which are the lyres that Stefano's talking about. But as he was saying, they're not elasticated, unlike the sort of traditional elasticated cat's cradle, so they're harder wearing and last longer. And you can also bend them out of shape.
You try, you know, to actually put them apart, and then they come back to the original position.
Right.
It's got a memory effect, and usually it's virtually unbreakable.
Right.
And the good thing about this Universal Studio Mount, it comes in two versions, the soft or light version and the standard version, is that accommodates microphones between 19 to 55 millimeters in diameter.
Right.
And in terms of weight, it goes from less than 400 grams up to 750 grams.
Right.
Now, most of the time, we would recommend the soft and light version, the USML. Mm. And the reason behind that is because if you use in a vertical position, then it's where you actually got more attenuation about handling noise and noise coming from the cable.
Right.
But if you start to use the microphone and the suspension in a horizontal or in an angled
So I guess
position,
like if you were miking up a guitar cab, for example, the mic would be sideways.
Yes. Then in that respect is where the weight becomes important, to know the weight of your microphone.
Yeah.
And therefore we would actually recommend for microphones above 450 grams up to 750 to use the standard version, where basically the difference is the lyres. One is more flexible and the other one is more rigid. That is basically the rationale behind this new studio mount.
Ryko's been to a number of shows this year. Stefano mentioned NAMM in Los Angeles, which is obviously very important for the launch of the Universal Studio Mount, and they were also present at the Frankfurt Music Messe. And now, of course, in the UK, the home territory. What do you feel, Tim, was the rationale behind supporting the AES here? It's an easy show for Ryko to attend, obviously. It's a question of coming down the M4, isn't it?
Exactly, it's right on our doorstep, so it's very important for us to obviously be present at a trade show within our own market. It's a good opportunity for myself as well, but just recently been appointed to the UK sales position at Ryko to introduce myself to as many people within the industry as possible, meet as many of our customers as possible, and most importantly, to continue the Ryko philosophy of gathering customer feedback on all of our products. So
absolutely,
it's a continuous evolution of making the product even better, be it more durable, better technology, etc., etc. But
absolutely,
really good to get some good customer feedback.
Excellent. I know it was very busy in here, particularly on Sunday morning. There were an awful lot of students in here. Have you had reasonable contact with the sort of numbers of people that you'd like to see?
Yeah, no, it's been very good for us. We've seen a lot of people. There's been some good footfall coming through.
Splendid.
And yeah, there's been a lot of interest in our products, particularly the USM and the USM Lite. So it's been good to show that and get some good feedback as well.
Excellent. Guys, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you, Mike.
Bye.
It's late afternoon on Monday, and I'm back in the press office for the moment, but this is one of the busiest periods of the convention, with three press events happening in quick succession. At 5:15, in about 15 minutes' time, Audio Precision are officially launching the audio analyzer they talked to me about yesterday on their stand, the APX515, hence the launch at 5:15, I guess. This will be followed by a gathering at 6 o'clock on the stand of eMerging, the UK distributor for Emerging Technologies, manufacturer of the Pyraminx Digital Audio Workstation. Merging are 20 years old this year and are having a gathering of press and AES visitors to celebrate, with Swiss wine, chocolates and cheese. Hot on the heels of that, at 6:30 p.m, there is an official launch for PMC's new active IB2 XBDA monitors in their dedicated demonstration room in the conference halls upstairs. I'm hoping to speak to somebody there from PMC about the new speakers and about their own programme of technical seminars. So, without any further ado, I'm going to sign off for today and get myself down to the Audio Precision stand. I'll report back tomorrow.